Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. Let's tell you what's on the docket today. First, is Brian Laundry deceased? Second, Barry Morphew catches another break. Third, Nicholas Cruz, remember that name? Well, he and his attorneys have made a tactical decision to plead guilty. Alex Murdoch is on his way back to South Carolina after he waives extradition. What does that mean? Perv alert down in Florida. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap of our contestants throughout the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. This is the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where an actual practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedures, and the law regarding cold cases and current criminal cases. Welcome to the show. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up, hit that little bell so they receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as always, please leave me a comment below about what we talk about today. You don't have to agree with me, but we can be civil about it. And don't forget, you can always listen to this show and past shows by downloading Crime Talk on all of your favorite podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Audible, and iHeartRadio. And now, before we get to the docket, you know we have to support the people that support us. Please go to crimetalkprep.com and claim your 3 months emergency food kit. Now, in today's world of supply chain shortages, this is a real concern. You need to be smart. You need to be able to take care of you and your family. Go to crimetalkprep.com and you'll receive $100 off the 3 month emergency food meal kit. Now, sure, you can get the 3 months emergency food kit, or you can get whatever you need. You can get more, you can get less, but it's there for an emergency. It is insurance. Nobody likes to get insurance, but they're glad that they have it when that unexpected emergency actually hits. So go to crimetalkprep.com, get that 3 month emergency food kit, and get that $100 off. You'll be happy you did. Okay, first on the docket today, is Brian Laundry deceased? Well, there are reports that yellow police tape has been put up near one of the creeks near the park, which connects the Carlton Reserve area where the police have been searching, and apparently there's been several police cars. Police brought in a cadaver dog to search the area yesterday, and although authorities have not confirmed that the dogs were brought there in connection with the search for Brian Laundry, this is the first time that yellow police tape has been seen in the area where the police have been searching for Laundry. Who knows? As you know, we brought you news the other day about other bodies that have been discovered in this particular area as a result of people out searching for Brian Laundry. So nobody really knows for sure what the cadaver dog was for or the police tape. The police simply are not talking. But I would think that if there was some new information about Brian Laundry, they would let us know, because here we are over a month that they've been looking for Brian Laundry. And although there's information that he's apparently in that nature preserve, I just don't think so. But that is pure speculation, and I'm telling you it's pure speculation on my part. I just have a gut feeling, and that's all it is. Take it for what it's worth. But I think it's based upon my hunch of observing the family that if my kid was missing, even if he's wanted or could be wanted for a homicide, that I would still want to find him, perhaps before the police or some vigilante finds him. And I would be out there searching, but his parents aren't. It's almost like they know he's okay. Just saying. Now, while it's not known whether Brian Laundry's dead or alive, a lot of people have been asking, if his body is found in the sprawling swamp, could his parents still be investigated? And the simple answer to that is Probably not. Okay. For somebody to be an accessory after the fact, they have to basically know that somebody is in fact wanted. It all comes down to what Brian Laundrie would have told their family members, his family members, his mom and dad, and even his sister. I don't think he told his sister anything. And even then, unless the parents confess to it, what evidence are they going to have? They basically claim that he was going for a walk and maybe they were misled by him so that they would not be charged. So I get it. There's a lot of angry people. That happens a lot of time in very emotional cases. But you don't create charges just to punish people that basically they can't prove that they were involved in some way. If the family comes forward, which I doubt they would because they have an attorney, and say, hey, we knew he was safe the entire time, then possibly, but they're not going to do that. So I think the chances of Brian Laundrie's parents being charged with anything at this point are about slim to none. I know it'd make a lot of people feel better, but guess what? The law is there not to make you feel good. It's there to actually punish people who have committed a crime. Now, I got a lot of people upset with me when there was talk about Dog the Bounty Hunter. Well, now Dog the Bounty Hunter is getting hammered, not by me, okay? He's getting hammered by the Laundrie family attorney who says he is just inserting himself into the Gabby Petito case purely for attention. The attorney, Stephen Bertolino, slams into Dog pretty hard, saying dusty relics like that Dog and John Walsh need a tragic situation like this so they can clear the cobwebs off their names and give publicity-hungry egos some food. Now, as you know, John Walsh is the host of TV's show America's Most Wanted, and actually had his son, who is a victim of a kidnapping and murder. He's arrested a lot of people. I get it, but I think the attorney probably went a little bit over the top on that. I think it was pretty obvious that a lot of people, particularly Dog, tried to insert himself into this situation. And then as the trail went cold, he got injured and returned back here to Colorado. So take it for what it's worth, ladies and gentlemen. He's stating, as a criminal defense attorney, he's kind of stating the elephant in the room, no doubt. Now, reporters apparently asked Bertolino if he feels Dog is impeding the official investigation by showing up unannounced at Brian's sister's house, and the attorney's response was, that's for law enforcement to determine. Now, I'm going to have to venture a guess here that the law enforcement really don't want Dog back or anywhere involved in this investigation. If they have credible information, great, but it is a distraction. I've never met a police officer that said, wow, let's have a bounty hunter. Let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, bounty hunters don't have the best reputation. And I'm telling you from experience, I've represented bounty hunters. Sometimes they go a little too close to the edge, and sometimes they cross the edge. I'm doing things, but it's usually for hunting for people that have jumped bond. That's why they're a bounty hunter. They get a bounty of a percentage of the bond when they collect somebody. There's no bond to be collected because no bond has been jumped by Brian Laundrie. There's simply a warrant for his arrest. Now, as you can imagine, a Dog has clapped back at the attorney, saying that Bertolino's comments about him are ironic and even suggests that Bertolino doesn't want Laundrie to be found. I mean, it may be a true statement, right? I mean, he may not want them to be found, and it's not like he's going to represent him in Wyoming if charges are in fact ever filed. We'll have to wait and see. And exact statement was, it's ironic that Mr. Bertolino would criticize the people trying to find Brian Laundrie unless perhaps he doesn't want him to be found. Okay, fair enough. We'll bring you the news, but I think the trail is getting a little dark on this particular case. And unless there's some new information, I think this is going to fade away from the headlines unless something is brought up real soon. Next on the docket, man, Barry Morphew is getting another break, okay? He had court yesterday, and he gets to reside in the same house, even though the GPS monitor doesn't monitor him where he lives. He just has to go to the town down the road and have his information downloaded from the GPS unit every day. Well, now he just got a little bit more good news. What is that? Well, one of the prosecutors handling his trial has resigned from the district attorney's office. The district attorney, Jeff Lindsay, last day is going to be November 5th. And the elected district attorney, Linda Stanley, has stated that Lindsay is headed to the Pueblo District Attorney's Office, and that's the 10th Judicial District here in the state of Colorado. Mr. Lindsay put out a brief statement, said, "I've resigned my position at this office." This is all via email, and he says he will no longer be a point of contact for this or any other case in the 11th Judicial District. Now, the elected district attorney said that Lindsay will be missed, but that his resignation will not be a detriment to the Morphew case. And she also stated, which I thought was curious, "We wish we had the opportunity to resolve any issues he may have had," which kind of makes it sound like somebody quit out of frustration. Because let's face it, you don't go from one district attorney job to the other district attorney job because they're paying you a whole lot more money. You're probably going there for seniority. You get to call the shots. And let's face it, it's always a little frustrating when the district attorney on the case, a chief district attorney, has more trial experience than the elected district attorney, and yet you're working for them. But I guess he should have run for office if that's the case. But it sounds like it was not a amicable departure from that. What does that really mean? Well, the district attorney's office only has four district attorneys in their entire office, and he was the senior one. The district attorney said that she will perhaps hire an experienced district attorney to work on this case full time. Well, she better do that, and she better do it quick, because they got a trial date coming up early next year. And I'm telling you, his attorneys, Barry Morphew's attorneys, are going to be ready for trial. And if you have a lot of inexperienced district attorneys and you have a judge who's not there to help the district attorney, but simply to call balls and strikes, could be another good day for Barry Morphew. He's got very skilled and experienced attorneys. They are going to be ready for battle. Will the district attorney be ready? We'll wait and see. All right, next on the docket, Nicholas Cruz. Well, he and his attorneys have made a pretty good tactical decision. Let's talk about what's going on and why they may have done it. Nicholas Cruz, the suspect in a deadly Florida shooting from February of 2018, is expected to plead guilty in court Friday afternoon, sparing the grieving families a long trial for the murders of 17 people. Now, Nicholas Cruz is going to be in court and is going to plead guilty to numerous counts in connection with the gun massacre at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Now, the judge is going to go over the charges, confirm that he understands what he's doing and that he is of sound mind and body, so to speak, and make sure he understands all of the possible penalties. Okay? And in this particular case, the penalty is still possibly death. Now, why would Cruz do that? Why wouldn't he make the prosecution just basically crawl over glass and make them prove their case? Well, because that's not really the issue. That case is not a whodunit. It's on video. It's going to be a simple case, a long, drawn-out, tedious case if the prosecution had to present the evidence and the family would sit there, the families would sit there and hear everything bad about that. Well, guess what? The defense making a tactical decision here, knowing that the prosecutors still plan to seek the death penalty. Well, guess what? They just made a little dent in what you call mitigation. When he pleads guilty, he's accepting responsibility. When Cruz pleads guilty, he's already made a little small step for mitigation and a case for life in prison, no doubt, when he pleads guilty to 17 counts of first-degree murder. Now, he is also going to enter a plea to attacking a correctional officer 9 months after the shooting. Gee, what's the big deal about that? He's going to go to prison for the rest of his life and possibly on death row. What is one more plea as it relates to that? Well, for sentencing purposes, that's an aggravator, right? It shows that maybe you're just not a nice guy and maybe you have no redeeming qualities whatsoever. So as you may recall, the trial in this case has been delayed because of the pandemic, and there's been arguments between the prosecution and the defense over what evidence and testimony could be presented to the jury. And some of the victims' families have expressed a lot of frustration over the delays, but the organizer leader of that group they formed expressed relief that the case is now getting closer to resolution. There's still going to have to be a sentencing hearing, and that sentencing hearing is going to decide ultimately Mr. Cruz's fate. But by not making the families go through that, it's a little bit, just a little bit of mitigation. Obviously, the aggravation is there's 17 deceased young human beings that never got to fully experience life because it was cut short as a result of Nicholas Cruz. Ultimately, the citizens of Florida will decide whether it warrants the death penalty or life without the possibility of parole. It's actually a very smart tactical decision. As you may recall, the Aurora Theater shooting case offered to plead guilty to life without the possibility of parole in regards to the 12 victims in that particular case, and the district attorney said no. The district attorney then went through the entire shooting, and they had to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. It wasn't a whodunit, but the defense made them go through all that. Ultimately, the Aurora Theater shooter got life without parole because of mental health issues, and that was in a very conservative jurisdiction here in the state of Colorado. I think it would have been even a faster decision if they had pled guilty and then focused what was important was the mental health aspect of it and presented that at sentencing. And it would have saved 3 weeks, the jurors having to view the evidence and having to deal with a lot of PTSD that comes from viewing a crime scene if you've never witnessed something like that. So I think the defense made a good move. We'll see if it was good enough to get life without the possibility of parole versus the death penalty. All right, next on the docket, Alex Murdaugh. Remember, he was released from his rehabilitation, his rehab facility yesterday, whereupon he was met by the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division officers and met with an arrest warrant. He was taken into custody, and obviously they don't get to just drive Mr. Murdaugh home. He had to go to the closest jail and be advised of the fact that he has charges pending in South Carolina. So Mr. Murdaugh had a couple of options. He could either A, waive extradition and say, I will go back voluntarily, or B, say, I'm going to fight extradition. If Mr. Murdaugh had chose to fight extradition, the courts in Florida would have had to have notified the courts in South Carolina, and then the governor from the state of Florida would have to send a letter to the governor of South Carolina saying, do you want this person? And then the governor would then send back a governor's warrant saying, yes, we want this individual, bring him back. There would also be an identity hearing saying, is this the right Alex Murdaugh that we are looking for? Well, Alex Murdaugh appeared in court today in Florida, and he waived extradition. I hereby acknowledge that I am the above named person. I am wanted on a pending arrest warrant charging the crimes captioned above. I hereby waive the issuance and service of the Florida governor's rendition extradition warrant and all other procedures incidental to extradition proceedings and agree to remain in the custody of the sheriff of Orange County, Florida, and voluntarily return to said demanding state in the custody of the duly accredited agent of said state. I hereby release the sheriff of Orange County and or any member of the Orange County Sheriff's Office from any liability relating to my arrest and custody in connection with the above captioned case. Signed by the fugitive, 10/15 of 2021. That being Alex Murdoch. And obviously the charges are, that's right, fraud, obtaining property by false pretenses related to the crimes of basically defrauding the insurance company and the deceased housekeeper's family of the $4 million that he was able to obtain by submitting claims to the insurance company. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. I wish him well. I'm glad he made it through rehab if he truly needed it. But now the time to come clean and accept responsibility is now, Mr. Murdoch. We'll give you the presumption of innocence, but you know as well as I do, Mr. Murdoch, you are going to prison. All right, there's a bolo. That's right. Be on the lookout in Florida for a perv. Florida authorities are searching for a man who reportedly broke into a home in Holiday, Florida on Thursday and stayed about 20 minutes in the house before leaving. Listen to this. According to the sheriff's office, an unknown man who appeared to be between the ages of 40 to 60 years old broke into a home off of Flora Avenue via a door near the garage. The incident was captured on security camera and showed the stranger walk towards a child's room, leave the room, and then undo his pants, then walk back into the room. Now, the homeowner said she awoke and immediately knew something was wrong because her daughter's bedroom door was open. Now, the woman started screaming when she saw the suspect walk out of her daughter's room, prompting him to flee the residence. She then woke up her husband and also got her dogs barking at the intruder, but the suspect was already fleeing the home. Now, the homeowner said, luckily, her 9-year-old did not wake up while the suspect was in the room. According to police, the suspect has short hair, appears to stand between 5 feet 7 inches to 5 feet 10 inches, and he was wearing black-rimmed glasses, a light polo-type shirt, and khaki shorts. And anyone that has information regarding this is urged to call the Pasco Sheriff's Crime Tip Line at 1-800-706-2488 in regards to case number 2103709. Ladies and gentlemen, I am telling you, and I've said this once and I'll say it again, it is a dangerous world out there, okay? As a criminal defense attorney, I am telling you this, okay? There are people like this last individual that we talked about that are willing to walk into somebody's home and do weird, creepy things there. Imagine if they were armed, what they could have done. You need to take care of yourself. You need to be able to take care of you and your family. Bottom line, it's going to be too late if something had happened and the police are called. As you can see, they woke up, the guy's gone, police not called. Not saying to do anything crazy, but in most jurisdictions, an intruder that comes into your house and dropping his trousers in your child's room, most states, you're probably, you know, gonna be justified if you were to do something to that individual. At least I think you'd be justified by most juries, that's for sure. All right, quick recap of our dumb criminal contestants of the week. First, Monday, Demarius Pritchett, a 21-year-old Wendy's shift manager, got into a verbal altercation with a customer over the food they received from the drive-thru, saying that it was cold. Pritchett was in the process of giving a cash refund, and he then went and grabbed a hot oil pan from the deep fryer and doused the customer in hot oil. Can't do that, Mr. Pritchett. Tuesday, authorities spotted a large fire while patrolling in Titusville, Florida. When they arrived, they saw flames 4 feet high on suspect Scott Taylor's front lawn. The suspect was sitting in his front yard, holding a sword in his hand, had a knife in his waistband, and began chugging from a half-gallon-sized Captain Morgan spice rum in front of the police. You got to get some points for creativity there, that's for sure. Wednesday, a homeowner installed cameras inside of her barn after finding her horse was having strange marks and ropes tied around their necks when they went out in the morning. The cameras captured Santiago Victoria entering the barn late at night and invading a stall with a horse named Mariah and getting behind the horse in a sexual manner. That's right, the suspect did in fact confess that he was having relations with the horses. Maybe get a few points just for being weird and creepy there. Maybe some creativity too, I don't know, but that's just weird and creepy. Thursday, while on patrol, Humboldt County Sheriff deputies tried to place 20-year-old Jacob Benning Moran under arrest when they learned that Moran had an outstanding misdemeanor warrant. As the deputies attempted to place Moran into custody, Moran began to physically resist the deputies. While resisting, Moran twice attempted to unholster a deputy's firearm, twice. Now, that is not good. That is very dumb. You're lucky you didn't get shot, Mr. Moran. So there's some good old-fashioned stupidness, no doubt. And today, who do we have? That's right, Mr. Matthew Huber. 43, was arrested Tuesday after witnesses spotting him attempting to burglarize a Nissan truck parked outside of a Walmart. Now, during police questioning, Huber reportedly admitted to opening the vehicle's tailgate and looking for something to take. Huber explained to the cops that he was attempting to get in the vehicle to see his imaginary girlfriend, Emma, adding that he only sees Emma when he's tripping on meth. Huber was arrested for burglary and carrying a concealed weapon. He had a butterfly knife. And during the commission, he had that during the commission of an offense. He's on a $10,000 bond. Now, clearly Mr. Huber making some poor decisions and probably on meth, like we've indicated before. Doesn't mean these people are truly dumb, but they have certainly been motivated by some illicit narcotics, no doubt. All right, you let me know in the comments who should be awarded the Dumb Criminal Contestant Winner of the Week. And since we didn't announce one last week because we were traveling and Frank was having a baby and everything, you can always throw in your winners from last week as well. What does the winner get? Crime Talk gear. That's right. Crime Talk gear. We'll send them a Crime Talk mug. Maybe we have several options, but we'll send it to them. And if you'd like to check out the Crime Talk gear, hit the links below. All right, that's all we have for you today. Have a wonderful weekend. Make sure you watch the week recap if you were not able to watch all the videos throughout the week. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.